As a traveler, it's a fact you're going to need to manage your spending in different currencies. You need a service that not only helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, but also does it without the hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This is where Wise comes in. Wise is the easiest way to connect all of your finances internationally. I've been a customer for over a decade. It's been a lifesaver for me as a traveler, a nomad, and now a permanent resident abroad. If you're a traveler who's still using your regular bank, you need to check this out. Join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/travel. That's wise.com/travel. Thank you to Wise for supporting today's show. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
As I've been traveling really with my sight issues and this medical condition, I started to kind of notice actually how difficult it was for people with disabilities to travel. And so I wanted to use this platform of Finishing really to start raising awareness and about people with disabilities traveling and making travel more inclusive. And I really try hard not to compare to anything else I've seen before and just be like, whatever I'm seeing is amazing in its own right. And I'm really glad I'm here. That might be different for people, but when you're losing your eyesight, every, for example, waterfall you see, is it going to be the last one I ever see? So for me, like, it's probably a little different to other people. But yeah, that's just the mindset I try and have.
That is the amazing and wonderful Haley Kennedy, who just finished becoming the first disabled person to visit all 193 UN member states and more. And the quest to go to every country is a big one, let alone for somebody that's facing challenges visually. And she talks about those openly and shares her story and her drive and motivation to see the world before her sight completely deteriorates. It's so inspiring what she's done. And there are many other universal lessons to pull out of this conversation. Learning to ask for help is a part of the journey for her, of course. She shares the biggest mistake she made and what she learned from it. Settling back into a regular life and a job after going to every country in the world, maybe not an easy thing to do, but something she's done all along. She's had to earn money for her travels. She talks about how that has added value to her travels. Definitely some food for thought there for those of you working in stable 9-to-5 jobs. Listen up for that. Of course, we get into destination recommendations, some advice on traveling to some of the more dangerous countries, how to respect cultures despite perhaps your personal beliefs, which is a complicated question. So much packed into this wonderful conversation. I know you're going to love it, and we're going to get into it right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Well, hello there. It's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. You can learn more about our guest today, Haley Kennedy, at baldblindbeautifultravels.com. I love the tagline over there. She says, "Baldy Travels, the adventures of a bald, blind, beautiful girl." She is a lovely soul, and I got the chance to chat with her. Just missed her when she came through Norway, but she hasn't gotten a lot of press yet for this accomplishment. So we're trying to get the scoop here on the podcast. And I thought it was cool to talk to her now because it's so fresh, just finishing this quest that she had. And that was something that I wanted to share a bit more about. If you stick around on the back end of this interview, you'll hear her talk about why people went from thinking she was crazy to a totally different perspective. It just flipped everybody's perspectives on what she was doing. And you'll hear about that. I think there's a lesson in there for all of us, no matter what we're planning, and you know, some of us here in the listening community, I think we're maybe free-spirited types. Maybe we live a bit more unconventionally, or at least we're thinking about and considering some unconventional lifestyles here and there. And you know, we might have some people that think we're a bit crazy. So I want to unpack that a little bit afterwards. Plus, I'll leave you with a quote. Without further ado, I do want to get into this conversation. First, a quick reminder, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Sign up for the free newsletter over there. All kinds of goodies going out off the pod that you can't get here. And lastly, it was a bit challenging with the audio when we were recording with Haley, because of course she was on the move and she was recording from her phone. So we cleaned it up as best we could. I don't think it distracts from the conversation, but just wanted to give you a heads up on that. Now, let's slip and slide into this conversation. Please enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side, my friend. Cheers. Haley Kennedy, welcome to Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Thank you.
I was hoping we could do this in person. I got a last minute invitation, or I guess a last minute message from our mutual friend, Gunnar Garfors, and his girlfriend, Jackie, who have both been on the show. And they said, hey, guess who's staying with us right now? It's Haley. She just finished traveling to every country in the world. And I said, oh, I want to talk to her. Like, well, maybe we can meet up in a couple of days. And they're like, oh, no, she's leaving like tomorrow. Darn.
Yeah, Norway was too cold for me, I'm afraid.
You're pretty much on the go, I guess, at this point. So I should have assumed.
Yeah, well, I start a new job next week. So I was just finishing as much travel as possible before then.
Oh, I do want to talk about the new job and everything like that, because I can imagine that's a bit of an adjustment going from, well, we'll get into all that. But I want to hear more about your adventure. I did not know where to begin with this. So I asked my daughter and I said, well, what would you ask Haley? And she told me the question, which I'll ask you in a minute. But first, I just want to like you to kind of let people know, because I don't want to steal your thunder here. You're the first person ever to do something. And so I want you to just share what you've accomplished.
Okay, so as far as we know, having checked with Nomad Mania, I am the first person with a disability to go to every UN country in the world.
Incredible. And can you talk about the disability and just share a bit about your story there?
Sure. So I have macular degeneration, quite a rare form called Stargardt's disease, which effectively means I've lost all of my central vision. The world is very blurry to me. So I can't drive, I can't like read books or newspapers, anything like that. Reading street signs is pretty difficult. Recognizing people's faces is virtually impossible. So yeah, I just live in a world where everything's a little bit blurry, a little bit more difficult. I constantly walk into things and trip over curbs and things like that. But yeah, you just get used to it.
When did this condition occur? Was it at birth or did it evolve over time?
Yeah, so I've always really been short-sighted. But when I was in my mid-20s, I was really starting to struggle. Driving was becoming more difficult. So I decided to go up to Moorfields Eye Hospital in London and get checked out. And they did loads of tests on me and they said, hey, nothing's wrong. We can't find anything. I said, well, why do I have all these black spots in my vision? And they were like, oh, okay, wrong department. So they sent me to the retina department, who basically told me that I had this condition, Stargardt's disease. I shouldn't be driving. So that was the last of me driving, very much taking away my independence and having to relearn how to kind of live normal life again.
Wow. And you were 20, how old at that point?
I was 27.
27. Okay. Wow. That's like, talk about having the rug pulled out from under you. How long did it take to process that news, really?
Quite a while. There were lots of tears. Eventually, I've had some counseling, which, you know, I guess talking about it did help. But really, it was about learning how I could still lived my life how I wanted to. And it really made me think about what was important to me. So one of the things I really wanted to do was see as much of the world as possible before I went blind. So I decided to start prioritizing that. So each of my holidays from work, I would go somewhere different. It started off just picking a point on a map and being like, where's that? Let's go. And then I guess later on, when I decided I was actually going to visit every country, it was a more strategic list of narrowing down what was left. But yeah, it took me to really work out how to live my life differently for me to really process it and kind of start living again.
So the goal to go to every country, that sort of evolved, that came later as an idea?
Yeah, I was just traveling. I wanted to see as much as possible. I always felt like I was on a bit of a time frame. Not that I ever knew when I would lose all my sight. It still hasn't happened yet, and long may it continue not happening. I always, yeah, it was just this ticking clock. Like, what did I want to do this year? How was I going to see as much as possible? If I got to the end of this year with some sight, like, what will I do next year? That kind of thing. So that's kind of how it started, I guess, in my late 20s. And then as I was reaching my late 30s, I was suddenly like, oh, maybe I could actually do this. What's left? And, you know, start planning to actually finish, basically. Like, the goal suddenly became realistic and doable. And so, yeah, I just carried on till I did it.
That's incredible. So have you been, I mean, sharing your story along the way? Have you just kind of been sort of like a private traveler in a way, kind of doing this? Or have you been talking to people? I know some of this, you wanted to raise some awareness around some stuff. If you want to get into some of the heart of the every country journey, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, so I guess as I've been traveling really with my sight issues and this medical condition, I started to kind of notice actually how difficult it was for people with disabilities to travel. And so I wanted to use this platform of finishing really to start raising awareness and about people with disabilities traveling and making travel more inclusive. But also, you know, like how to help people or how airlines or airports can be more helpful or train stations or, you know, there's not a lot of help out there, even if you request it, like through formal channels, for example, with airlines. But actually, a lot of people just need quite small adjustments to make things a lot easier for them. But people always assume what people want without actually asking. So yeah, I wanted to raise some awareness really on how to be more inclusive to people with disabilities and to make their life a bit easier, but by asking them, not by guessing.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. That's why I was, when I asked my daughter, who's 7, I said, well, what would you ask her? And she came up with I'm always coming up with these complicated, long-winded questions. And she's just like, ask her, how did she do it? I'm like, okay, well, that's actually a really good question. How did she do it? How did you do it?
Well, it's taken me over 20 years, so it wasn't anything quick.
Yeah.
You know, just by picking a place and then doing a lot of research and trying to see as much as possible when I get there, trying to work out the best way for me to do it. So I've done a lot of solo travel, but I've also done quite a bit of travel with groups such as like Lupine, Young Pioneer Tours, Saiga, Wild Frontiers, where they're going to destinations where when I've done my research, they have a trip that's like fairly close to what I want to do. And therefore, it takes the stress out of some of the really difficult logistics of, like, imagine if you have to go and get a bus, but you can't read the bus numbers, or even try to get an Uber when you can't read the registration numbers. Like, a lot of people take all of this stuff for granted. But actually, when you can't see properly, this is really challenging and quite intimidating stuff. So in some countries where I've known there's going to be, like, really difficult challenges, I have opted to go with a tour group. And generally, I'll always tell them, like, oh, I can't see properly. Like, if I look lost, I am lost. Please come and rescue me. Or, you know, even like hiking down a mountain or something. Sometimes, like, people need to take my hand and guide me down a challenging bit. So by just asking people for help and explaining to them what the problem is or where you might need help, people have been fantastic. But if they don't know, how can they help?
That makes a ton of sense. You need that support, you know, especially in certain countries, I'm sure, even more than others. You know, this is an interesting topic because some people, regardless of their physical abilities or whatever, it's like hard for people to ask for help for some people. Like they don't feel like, they feel like they might be inconveniencing somebody, or, you know, others don't mind. Like, I don't mind asking for help. I'll be the guy asking the dumb questions. I'm like, yeah, can you just, I don't know what this is, you know, someone help me out here. But I know that's a struggle for some people. Like for you, was that something that was hard to get used to doing, or was that part of your personality beforehand?
It was definitely hard to get used to. I'm a very independent person. I can generally go and do most stuff I want by myself, and suddenly having to ask for help. And, you know, I often felt kind of stupid asking for help as well, because it was things that I used to be able to do without issue. So you do have to get used to it. Although sometimes when you do ask for help, you really don't get a positive answer. And then that makes it even worse asking for help the next time. So yeah, genuinely people are pretty good. And like, if you explain, they're really nice and they will help you. But sometimes you get people that like having to deal with someone with a disability is just so inconvenient for them. They really get like annoyed. And it's quite upsetting really when you've built up the courage to ask for help, or, you know, admitting you can't do something, and then someone shouts at you or, you know, has a go at you for something you can't change. I just hope that some of those people never need to ask for help. For example, if they get a disability, and I hope people don't react like that, because then they'd realize how awful it is when they do that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's super upsetting. You're so vulnerable out there, you know, when you're needing help. There must have been many times along the way traveling out of a country that you just, you know, literally like, I literally need somebody to help me out with this. Like, I'm not going to be able to figure it out on my own. I can't read these buses numbers, for example, like you said before. That's a position not a lot of travelers are in, you know?
Yeah, and I hope they're not. But for those that are, let's make it easier for them.
Leading by example and seeing what you've accomplished, you know, it's you've been able to do it, which is so inspiring.
Thank you.
Did you travel a lot before you were diagnosed?
I did, yeah. It was still a major hobby of mine. It just moved a lot further up the priority list.
Sometimes I think like we should all have more of a sense of urgency when it comes to this kind of stuff, right? Like,
well, you never know when your time's up, right?
So. Right, exactly. As far as the travel experience itself, how did that change for you as you leaned into your other senses, and how did that maybe open other parts up for you internally or externally?
Well, I think I listen a lot more carefully. You're more aware of like sounds around you. I mean, I haven't totally lost my sight, like just life is very blurry. So like I can kind of see the bigger picture, but not any detail. So I can generally walk down a street, but I couldn't tell you any of the street names or the road signs or anything like that. Crossing the road, because as well as my condition, I've also got double vision, which is a real pain. So it often looks like two cars are coming at you, or they're coming at you from different angles, which, you know, can be quite funny when you don't have anything to do and you're just like, wow, my eyes are so screwed. But when you're trying to cross the road, then it becomes really challenging because you're not quite sure how far away the car is, or, you know, what angle it's coming at.
Right.
So
terrifying.
You kind of listen. It's not great. So yeah, you listen a lot more. You try and work things out by listening. But equally, like if someone else is trying to cross the road, I'll try and move to the side of them that's away from the car. So technically they'd get hit first if there was a problem. And if they cross the road, I cross the road. You know, things like that. It's just learning to do stuff very differently when you can't rely on your eyesight necessarily to do what it's meant to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about crossing the road in a place like Vietnam where you have to just step out and hope everybody stops for you. And I'm terrified as a sighted person. So it's like,
well, in that one, you just have to close your eyes, right, and walk. So in fact, sometimes I'm probably better off.
How long ago did you finish this? What was your last country?
So I finished in November, in the last week of being 30. of my 30s, I should say, which was a real thing for me because I'd heard a statistic about the majority of people finishing were men over 40. So I was really determined to be a woman under 40.
Yes!
When I finished. but my last country was Libya.
I have some questions just about your experience out on the road, wondering what culture you most identified with, do you think, through your travels?
That's a very good question. I guess I've struggled more with the cultures where women aren't necessarily considered equal, or where someone would like talk past me to a man that might not have anything to do with me. I think where everyone's equal and where everyone has the ability to do the same thing, I guess that's where I most identify with. The countries I've really struggled traveling with, and one of the ones I found most challenging was probably Afghanistan. And I was on a fantastic tour with Saiga, but there were just so many instances where it's like, oh, you're a woman, you're not allowed to do this. For example, I wasn't allowed to go to the theme park in Kabul. And I was like, but I've been to loads of theme parks, like, why can't I go in this one? No, women just weren't allowed in, kind of thing. And I found that really difficult because that was something I really wanted to do. I really wanted to go there. But when you travel, you have to respect the cultures of that country. You might not necessarily agree with them. You might really hope for change for the other women in that country. But you are a guest in that country, and you still have to respect the cultures they're living by at this time.
Yeah, I can imagine that's difficult. And I remember, you know, our mutual friend Jackie sharing a story from her trip through Afghanistan on the podcast. That was another upsetting type of situation like that.
But Jackie's fun to travel with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess when you go into a country like that, you know, you can know what you're stepping into intellectually, but that doesn't mean you've had the on-the-ground experiences yet that are going to hit close to your heart.
Yeah. I mean, we were in Kandahar and we wanted to climb up to the top of this palace, and the Taliban stopped us and they said, hang on, we've got to do an announcement from the mosque that all women need to go inside. So that we as a group, which was mainly men plus me, could climb to the top. And we said, no, please. We don't want to interrupt like normal people's lives. You know, we're here to observe, not to disrupt, kind of thing. And so then I said, well, hang on, I'm a woman, I'm allowed to see other women, so can I go to the top? Like, this was the one time I was allowed to do something without the men. And even the Taliban wouldn't come with me because I was a woman. So they sent the kids to come up to the top of this palace with me. And it was just a mud palace. You know, so it wasn't very high. We just walked around the corner. And the little girls were so excited to be allowed to do something like with a kind of foreign woman. And it was just walking up a few stairs and standing at the top of this palace. But the men, for a change, weren't allowed to do it. And it just seemed so bizarre that women would have to go inside their homes so like a bunch of men could walk up a few stairs to have a look at the view. But, you know, that was kind of how it was. And it was just very different to what we're ever used to.
Yeah, you hear stories like that. It's hard for me to process the experience growing up in a society like that, where, I mean, like I said, I have a daughter. So thinking about those situations, having a little girl.
It's just a different culture.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there. And that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself. And that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries. Plus, it's the best reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something. And it makes an incredible gift. Under 50 bucks. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. Well, as far as resonating, though, with a culture, what was a culture you really vibed with where you feel like almost like, I feel home here almost immediately? There's places like that that you go and you just feel, I don't know, it just feels like a little extra connection for whatever reason.
Yeah, I really loved like the South American Latino culture. I think probably South America is my favorite continent. Like every country you go to, there's something amazing to see, like new food, new drinks. I couldn't pick a country in South America I didn't like. You know, it was just super fun kind of traveling around.
I call it the adventure continent.
It's fab. And even my Spanish is getting better. Like every time I go there, I learn a few more words and it's getting easier.
Nice. I'm obsessed with the Argentinian Spanish because it's so sing-songy and beautiful. I love to hear them speaking or arguing or whatever.
No, it's just a fun continent.
Absolutely. Well, I do want to get some destination recommendations here. I'm not going to ask you for your favorite country because that's not a fair question. And it's the obvious one.
An impossible one.
Yeah, and impossible. And kind of lazy interviewing question. I'll just say that. No offense to anybody who's asked before. But I do like destination recommendations. And I know they change. You know, we could probably chat with you tomorrow and you would come up with three different ones. But I wanted to hear three of your favorite off the beaten track destinations. Let's say these are places that, you know, maybe not the mainstream traveler is going, but perhaps they should. And then on the other side, your top three or three of your favorite sort of mainstream destinations that there are countries that are well touristed, but also worth visiting. Can you do that? I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but.
Okay. Off the beaten track. Papua New Guinea really stands out. I loved going to the Mount Hagen Festival, seeing all the different tribes. Tonga. I got to swim with the whales. I booked a really spontaneous trip and just being able to get in the water with whales was incredible. And probably Ecuador, like the Galapagos Islands. You know, that's something really special. I hope people get to visit the Galapagos. And then more mainstream, maybe Spain and Italy. I really love visiting those two countries. They're just so different when you go to the different towns and the food is incredible. And then probably sticking on the food theme, probably Japan as well.
Nice. Awesome list. I think the healthiest sort of travel mindset in a lot of ways is to just go in with the beginner's mind and kind of having the, you know, taking the experience for what it is and not comparing it to other experiences. But when you have so many experiences that you've had all over the world in every country, I'm sure sometimes it's hard. Is it hard to kind of maintain that mindset? Or do you find yourself comparing, oh, this is cool, but you know, Iguazu Falls was cooler than that. You know, it's not ideal, but we do it as humans.
So I try and go to each country with a totally like open mindset. Like, and I also, although I do a lot of research, I try not to look at a lot of pictures because I don't want to have an image in my mind of what it's going to be like, and then be disappointed. Because a lot of people, for example, will say, oh, the Taj Mahal looks amazing. And you turn up and it's so much smaller than you think. Like, you know, they can be disappointed. It's still, the Taj Mahal is still amazing, but people have this expectation it's different to what it is. So I do try and go totally open-minded. Also, I do feel like incredibly spoiled and incredibly fortunate because I feel like I go on people's once-in-a-lifetime trip, like every other week or something like that, just because I've made travel my priority. You know, other people have different priorities. So it can get challenging. But if you, what I try and do is I land in a country, for example, or cross the border into a country, and I'm like, right, what am I going to see here? And I really try hard not to compare to anything else I've seen before and just be like, this, whatever I'm seeing is amazing in its own right. And I'm really glad I'm here. That might be like different for people, but when you're losing your eyesight, like every, for example, waterfall you see, is it going to be the last one I ever see? Like, you know, or something like that. So for me, like, it's probably a little different to other people. But yeah, that's just the mindset I try and have.
I love that. I mean, I think that's the healthiest way to go. Of course, that's, I just brought it up because you've seen so much. I would say, you know, the nomads or the people that have been to every country or people that have traveled so much, maybe this is more of a something to think about where you're intentionally kind of like, let me open up my mindset, as opposed to perhaps somebody that's traveling, you know, once or twice a year and it's pretty fresh all the time. I was just curious about that. What was the biggest mistake you made and what did you learn from it?
So I traveled with a now ex-boyfriend that had very different lifestyle choices to me, in terms of like eating and things like that. I probably wouldn't do that again. So he was a guy that was vegan. I am very much a meat eater, and it very much changed the travel experience for me. Because whereas like when I go to a country, I want to try all the local food and I like to try the local beer or wine or, you know, whatever their drink is that's for that country. And when you're traveling with someone that, you know, doesn't eat the majority of foods that you enjoy, it then makes mealtimes very challenging. And there's three meals a day. So, you know, this takes up quite a considerable amount of time when you've got to choose a restaurant that, you know, someone can eat in, where they have such a limited like amount of stuff they can eat. And then it also takes away from the amazing restaurants that have the food that you want to eat. So I think I learned my lesson there. Like, probably should choose who I date a bit better, especially if I'm going to travel with them.
Nice. What about your advice for research? Because we talked about research before. You mentioned kind of, you know, not wanting to look at too many pictures. I think that's, yeah. And then in some ways less is more, but in other ways, I'm sure you had to do extra research for some logistics and things like that. I'm just wondering, just for travelers going to some of these maybe more off the beaten path type of countries and destinations, did you have some planning advice you wanted to share? Really looking for travel advice here.
Sure. So I guess if I decide I'm going to a country, I will go on Google or go on TripAdvisor and find out what the top things to do in that country are. And then I'll work out which of those I want to see. For example, you know, if you have a 2-week holiday from work, for example, you probably can't see 50 things across India, for example, but you can focus on like an area and say, right, I'm going to do this area this time. Okay. What's in that? Okay. These are the top things I want to see. But actually what else is around, these places that I could also do. I guess what makes it more complicated for me is that I don't drive. So everything either has to be done by taxi, which is generally expensive, a day tour, a tour company, or public transport. So you have to work out, like, in your time frame, what's more practical, how much things cost and how much you're willing to spend. and equally what's most important to do. So you can easily find stuff about the majority of countries online. TripAdvisor's great, Google's great. Even just looking up what tour companies do and seeing their routes, there's so many options of, you know, potential itineraries and things like that. I guess for me, the worst thing is when someone posts a question in a group and they're like, hi, I want to go to this country. What should I do? And I'm like, hang on, you've got all these resources around you. Like, why can't you choose for yourself where you want to go? Why are you waiting for people to tell you, kind of thing? But equally, the more you travel and the more you meet people, the more they'll say, oh, have you been here? Or I really enjoyed this place. Like, have you been? And you start looking it up. And, you know, I'll always take people's recommendations and do a little bit of research around it and work out if that's what I want to do or see, or, you know, if I have to prioritize, is it something I want to move higher up the list, kind of thing. So yeah, just making your own decisions, doing your own research, and just chatting to other people that travel is probably my recommendation.
This is going to be very specific because it's not everybody that wants to go to every country in the world, but what would be your number one piece of advice for those that want to visit every country?
Just make a plan and go. Because the worst thing you can do is sit at home thinking about it.
Knock off the more difficult countries earlier on? You know, what about that type of thinking?
I don't know. Obviously, like if countries are closed, like North Korea, for example, at the minute people can't go, so they have to plan something else. I guess I would just say my recommendation would be don't go to too many similar countries all at once. Because you won't necessarily experience the uniqueness of each place. If you're like, for example, if you're going around the Middle East, you're very much in the same kind of culture, seeing the same kind of buildings and things like that. Whereas if you did one and then something else and then, you know, went into Africa, for example, then went to South America, then went back to the Middle East, I think you appreciate what you're seeing a lot more when you haven't been like totally overwhelmed by a lot of the same thing. I guess that would be my main piece of advice.
Some of the more dangerous countries, and I'm using that word based on the Global Peace Index that's released by the Institute for Economics and Peace each year. And then they have top 20 most dangerous countries as a part of that. And so it's like you mentioned Afghanistan, there was like Yemen, Syria. These are some of the ones on the list. DR Congo, Ukraine, you know, these places where there's ongoing wars, or is one of the better ways to go with a group? Were you mostly with groups in those types of places? I guess what's your advice around, you know, even this is just for anybody that just wants to dive into exploring a country like that for whatever reason, which for some people, they're just motivated to go to some of these places. I'm not. But some are, and I'm asking for them.
Yeah, I did a lot of the more dangerous ones with groups. I think in general, you've got to work out what your own personal risk tolerance is, and work out when the right time for you to go is, based on your research, chatting with your tour guide, you know, things like that. One thing I've often found is that actually the countries that the media reports most negatively on really aren't as bad as what the media is generally saying. Now, I'm not saying like go into a war zone and then, you know, be like, oh no, the media were telling the truth, that there is a war, kind of thing. But I think when generally it's reported how dangerous somewhere is, you know, any place could be dangerous, but you have to do your research and work out what your own risk tolerance is. Like, for example, I probably have quite a high risk tolerance. And one of those reasons is because I don't have children. So I'm not leaving kids behind that would be without a parent if something happened to me in these areas. But I can totally understand why people, both men and women with children, don't want to go to some of these countries, because that is a high risk. But each individual has got to decide it for themselves. Like, you can't tell someone it's okay to go. They've got to feel that it's okay to go, and they're happy they're taking on that risk themselves. I think very much for them to enjoy the trip that they do or do not decide to go on.
Yeah, thanks for that. And you mentioned the research again, too. Like, I was reading your blog post on your trip to Haiti, and I know you had avoided the capital city because the word was that it wasn't, you weren't going to be really as protected by the locals in a way, kind of the way you were describing it. You know, that's a great practical example of like, okay, you still want to go to this place, but, you know, figure out where to go, where it's going to be the safer place to go within that country, for example.
Yeah. And Haiti was beautiful. I'd love to go back and explore a bit more. But for me, I don't feel comfortable going back again right now. But hopefully that'll change in the future.
Well, what was the most uncomfortable experience that you had on this journey? Or, you know, if you're willing to share at least one of them.
I haven't had too many. And to be honest, I'd say I've been incredibly lucky in that respect. Clearly, I haven't been in the wrong place at the wrong time very often. I think my most recent one was probably in Central African Republic, where I was taking pictures at the hotel. I was taking a picture of sunset, and all of a sudden I was being like pinned down by two military women taking my phone, you know, basically telling me they're calling the police. That was pretty uncomfortable because I don't speak French. So the only word I recognized was like gendarme, meaning police. And I was just like, I really don't know what I've done wrong here because I took a picture of sunset. It turned out that it was actually them just trying to get me to buy my phone back. And when I did realize that, I did calm down a lot, but it was very unnerving at the time because I just didn't know what was happening. And I kind of felt I was in the safe space being in the hotel, but maybe not so much. Like, you know, things happen unexpectedly. Like, when you do relax and you're like, oh, I think I'm safe here, I guess that is when, you know, things potentially happen because you've dropped your guard.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a tricky thing too, right? You want to be open and you want to have your, you don't want to have your guard up all the time in a way.
You are on holiday or traveling.
Yeah. And you might be preventing
you do
some...
You want to relax a bit.
Right. And also like you might be putting up some kind of energy if you're on your guard that you're making it less likely to have some interactions perhaps with locals or, you know, if you're just thinking everybody's out to get you, which they're not, then yeah. So it can be a tricky line when you're in certain places, I guess, particularly cities.
Yeah. Well, I had been told my alopecia haircut, was very army-like. So, maybe they mistook me for an army chick, but, who knows?
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected. And I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled BABBEL.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, Jason here. Did you know we have a free weekly newsletter over at zerototravel.com/newsletter? I put my heart and soul into this newsletter and love keeping in touch with listeners off the podcast. That's where you can find out about all of the latest and greatest events, trips we're planning, and of course, you're going to get money-saving travel tips, destination advice, all kinds of stuff to provide value and help you add more travel into your life. So why not sign up? Again, totally free, no cost at all. zerototravel.com/newsletter. Excited to welcome you into that community. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. What is something that most surprised you about yourself?
I guess just my ability to get through really tough situations and just to carry on. I think there's kind of day-to-day life where, you know, you have your struggles and things like that, but then there's stuff going wrong on the road when you really need to you know, pull yourself together and, you know, I have to get to the next place or I have to get where I'm going, you know, and you've just got to do it. And even though there's other stuff going on or there's stuff going on around you, you've just got to, you know, I guess in some ways it's a bit like fight or flight or survival of the fittest. You've just got to get through it. And you can, kind of thing. And I guess that's what I realized, that even if things are going wrong, you know, generally the adrenaline kicks in and, you know, you can get to where you need to go, and survive. And then, you know, it can all fall apart then. But yeah, you need to get yourself, you know, to kind of safety or the next place or whatever.
Who was the most memorable character you met along the way? Somebody that just right pops into your head.
There's a few people. I think, well, Jackie and I had like the best time traveling in Guyana together. I traveled with my mate Nabil in Afghanistan. He was one of the other people on the trip and we just had a blast and we went to Eritrea. And then there's just like super funny moments, like in Papua New Guinea. I had this awful situation where my ex turned up and Gaz from YPT came crawling across the ground to tell me that he'd arrived where we were, and like the tribe stopped dancing because this man in a bright yellow t-shirt with like a builder's bum was just crawling across the floor. So and there's so many like funny moments like that from traveling with just different people. You know, travel's just so much fun. You end up in the craziest situations just laughing about it.
Love it. Were you working full time while you were doing all these trips? I wanted to ask you about your new job. How have you been kind of managing your lifestyle over the years accomplishing this goal?
Yeah, generally I've been working full time for the majority of it. As I've changed jobs, I've generally taken a bit of time off. I think I took 6 months off one time. I've just taken a couple of months now. But apart from that, yeah, it's public holidays, annual leave, you know, things like that. And that's why it's been over 20 odd years.
I think that's important just for people listening, because I think the assumption is, you know, this seems to be the case with a lot of people that have gone to every country, is there, it just takes many years and they're working full time and just doing it over time. And it's probably the exception. It would be the person that's just, you know, the nomad that's just constantly traveling and doing it all in one shot.
I mean, that would be my dream, but sadly, I need to earn a living to pay for it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's been fun. And also, like, it means that, like, each trip is something special because you are working for it in between and things like that. But I mean, most people I work with think I'm pretty crazy. And I used to get a lot of comments about, like, why would you want to go to that country? Why are you going there? Why are you so silly? But yeah, definitely towards the end, people were like, oh, wow, you're right. Like, you said you were going to do this when you first started, like, my first job, and now you're doing it. Like, it's nearly done. This is crazy, kind of thing. Like, and, you know, they got really behind it and really supportive.
Yeah. What about your family and friends? What did they think of this?
Again, crazy. I used to travel with quite a lot of friends when I first started. And then kind of as I started going to crazier and crazier places, they kind of dropped off until I was basically traveling by myself. And then I found some of these tour groups and I met people on those trips and then started traveling with them separately as well. So now I have a group of friends who are as crazy as I am. And then I have my normal group of friends who still think I'm crazy. So it's a nice mix.
That's great. Well, I mean, those are two great bits of advice, though. I mean, just the fact that you were working full time and kind of going back and forth and figuring it out. I think if somebody's listening and they want to go, you know, to 25 countries or 50, maybe they don't want to get everyone, but they have a goal like that. It's good to know that it's doable. And also that what you just mentioned, I think, is really ties in with just community. It's just like, you know, there is a community for everybody out there at some point. Like you said, you went to the crazier places, as you called them, and then you found the other people that were like on board with that vibe, right? So your friends, you know, that went to Paris with you, they're like, yay, Paris. Wait, not Afghanistan. All right, see you later. But then you found your other crew, yeah. And they're like, yeah, Afghanistan, let's go. So then you can, yeah, you can find those people to get the support.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. I have, since I finished, I have had a lot of invites from my, I'd say my normal friends being like, hey, do you want to come here, like a normal city in Europe? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a really cool idea. Like, just to, you know, have some of my time now dedicated to traveling with my friends I started traveling with, and some dedicated to crazier places kind of thing. Like, I'm looking forward to having some more normal trips and also having the freedom to choose where I go again. Like, when you are trying to complete this goal, it sounds really crazy, but you get to the point where you're like, oh, I want to be free of this because I've only got, say, 10 countries left. And yeah, maybe some of them aren't countries I'd necessarily pick to go to, but, you know, I've got to go. And so now I have the freedom again to just choose exactly where I want to go. And that's exciting again.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, what does that look like next for you for travel? I mean, is it about going back to places you loved and you want to explore further? Or is it just kind of see where the wind takes you, who's going where? Let's just, whatever, I'm willing to go anywhere. What is that looking like for you for the next?
Yeah, so when I finished in late November, I just did Antarctica, French Polynesia, Pitcairn, Cook Islands. So I picked as far away as possible I could go from the UK as kind of my last trip before starting work again. But I don't know. Ghana has set me a challenge, which I'm not going to reveal yet. I'm still considering whether I'm going to do it or not. Yeah, but not really many plans this year. Probably a dive trip to Indonesia with some friends. Let's see what happens.
Don't tell me he's trying to get you to go to every country twice.
A little bit, but with a slightly different twist. Anyway, I want to talk more to him about it if I decide it's something I'm going to embark on. I'm not sure yet. I'm still trying to enjoy actually finishing before like starting something new.
What's your next job? What are you working on?
So I'm going back into the insurance market. So I've been on the client side for the last 6 years and I'm going back into insurance broking in kind of a strategic role. So I'm really excited about that. I am getting a lot of messages saying enjoy your afternoon naps because you've got a full-time job next week. So I am going to have to get used to not having the afternoon nap or, you know, falling asleep on the bus or the train or wherever I'm going. So that will be a bit of a shock to the system. But I'm super excited about the new challenge, the new role. It should be really good. I'm super looking forward to it.
Well, here's a question for the active traveler that is doing an office type job. What's your advice for kind of getting back into that mindset, you know, going from sort of like a wild adventure to, okay, like 2 weeks later, now I'm sitting here and I have to focus and I have to just be present here and not, it's almost like two separate lives in a way.
It is. So, and I probably need to take my own advice here. Always have something booked to look forward to.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Always have something you're aiming for. Generally something you've paid for in advance, so you're not working after the event to pay for it. But yeah, just always have a plan.
I do remember just coming back from like months and months away and just it's almost seeming surreal. Like, did that just happen? And how do I just calm down and be in one place now? It's kind of challenging.
Well, there's weekends, right? You don't have to be in one place all seven days of the week.
Yes, that's very true. Very true. What is going to be the next trip for you then?
I don't know. I'm catching up with some friends next week who have some plans that they want to see if I'm interested in. So I'll let you know.
How has all of the travel changed your relationship to the UK?
I still find the UK way too cold for me, but it is home. I don't know. It's always nice to go home. I got back a few days ago, just for a few days, and there was a train strike and the buses didn't work and I couldn't send a letter from the post office. So it's... you know, not in its best state at the minute, but hopefully things will improve. I guess, yeah, it's home. I'll get used to living back there and still do as much travel as possible.
Do you have a favorite cultural concept that you experienced in another place that you've implemented into your daily life at home or that you would like to? Like, I'm thinking about in Sweden, they have like fika, where you just, you know, you take a break during the day and you have a coffee and something a little sweet. It's like a nice tradition, I guess, or a cultural concept, let's say.
I definitely like the siesta culture. That's definitely something that sits great with me. But I know the UK, yeah, a nap, an afternoon nap is one of my favorite things. But that doesn't really fit into English work culture. You know, when I travel, it's something like I like to get up early and, you know, say do a hike, for example, if you're somewhere where that's possible or there's somewhere beautiful to go and hike to. You know, and then, you know, have a nice lunch and then have a nap and then do something in the afternoon. You know, it just depends on your travel circumstances and where you are. Hopefully I can get into the nap culture again at some point. But yeah, you've just got to take each situation you're in and, you know, make the best of it. Like we said at the start, you never know how long you've got. So just enjoy each day and the opportunities you get and the opportunities to travel.
I feel like sometimes some people can have the perception that, oh, if I travel too much, it's like not going to reflect well on my resume. And I can imagine that you've gotten some interesting conversations getting these jobs over the years, being like, you're doing what? I think it's a perk. Have you had any resistance to your travels from potential employers?
Haven't really had any negative reactions, which has been awesome. It's definitely been talked about in the job interviews I've had. Most of the time, just because actually I'm using the same skills as I'd be using in a work environment. So people are actually quite interested to hear how you use those skills differently, especially as one of the angles I very much discuss in interviews is around my disability and how I look at things a little bit differently because I've had to learn to do things differently. And how that can really be advantageous to an employer. Luckily, because it could have been very different, no real negativity to all the travels. Actually, people quite enjoy reading my blog, especially people I've worked with, and are always like, oh, post some more, like, where's next? So that's always been quite good.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's encouraging for people to hear, just kind of like, don't let that mindset of, oh, if I, you know, if I take months off to travel, that's going to negatively impact me in my career. It's not necessarily
true. I think it used to in the past.
Yeah.
But I do think that mindset's changing now.
Mm. Is there something that you wish others knew about you? You can share it here. It's just us.
I don't know. I'm kind of an open book. So I think most people who know me know quite a lot about me.
Well, what are you most proud of outside of the accomplishment?
I guess like just getting through kind of becoming disabled and learning how to do things differently. If I actually like really reflect on how I felt like the moment I found out to where I am now, things are very, very different. And it's been a lot of hard work to get to this point. Even although alopecia is not a disability, with losing my hair and stuff, actually going from losing my hair when I was 13 to now, you know, going into job interviews or work meetings or traveling the world, as a bald white woman, you know, that has taken a lot of courage. I mean, it has taken me nearly 30 years to get to that point, but now I'm so proud of myself for getting there. And it's the same with my eyesight as well. Like, it was a massive shock. You know, it took some time to process, learning to do things differently. But I've got to a point in my life where I'm actually, you know, very content and very happy, despite the challenges I have to get through. And yeah, life's pretty good. Can't complain.
Amazing. Super inspiring. And thanks for... yeah, just being willing to share and getting to learn more about your journey. And I find it super inspiring, and I'm honored that you came on to share it with listeners here today. And we'll link up to your Instagram, of course. It's at Bald Blind Beautiful, and your website, baldblindbeautifultravels.com. Am I missing anything? Is that the place that best places for people to find you?
Yeah, that's all good. And yeah, you got them right. But just thank you for having me. It's been great chatting with you.
It was so nice. Let's do it again in person next time.
Yes, let's. I'll tell Gunnar to give you more notice.
All good. Yeah, good luck with the new job as well.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
There you have it. Special thanks to Haley Kennedy once again for taking the time to reflect on this accomplishment. So soon after it, she'll be back in the office right after this. And I thought that was a lovely part of this conversation too. She's been working the whole time and earning money for the travels, as you need to do. And when you're traveling to every country in the world, it costs a lot of money. And she said that helped her appreciate the travels even more. So I think it's easy in this little world of sort of long-term, full-time travel, maybe extreme quests like this one or adventures, to just kind of assume, well, this is, you know, people get sponsors, or they are, you know, paid to travel somehow, or they're content creators and all of these things. And, you know, I've talked to many people who just, you know, they just work regular jobs. I mean, Gunnar, I want to give a shout out to him. He introduced me to Haley and hooked me up with her to have this conversation. He worked a full-time job while he was traveling to every country in the world twice. And I think that's really inspiring to know how much traveling can still be done even if you have the full-time gig. And of course, now more than ever with remote work and things like that, if you're somebody that's been thinking about asking for permission to work remotely and you might be in the position to do so, go for it. I'm just going to say go for it. So anyway, couple other quick things. I will leave you with a quote. I did want to comment on this thing that Haley shared at the end of our conversation, where she talked about how this challenge completely changed the perspective of the people around her. And I just wanted to bring attention to that because, you know, I like to unpack these things at the end, kind of reflect on the conversation itself and some of those universal lessons. And this was one of them. I was thinking, you know, if people are thinking you're crazy for doing something, could that be a great thing? I mean, maybe that's a great thing. And in the end, will they feel the same way? And it can be easy for us to be dissuaded from doing things we want to do because we have influential friends or family in our ear telling us we're crazy or that's stupid or you can't do that, or coworkers or whatever. And the question is, are they going to feel that way, you know, 3 or 5 years from now when you're done X, Y, or Z thing, or 2 months from now or whatever? As you heard in Haley's story, people started off thinking she was crazy and now they think it's such a great thing and she's developed all these skills and they just think it was this wonderful accomplishment. And I just wonder, you know, for us, if anybody's out there struggling with people telling them they're crazy for this, that, and the other, well, maybe you could think a bit wider and think about how their perception might change in the end. Maybe that gives you the sort of the gumption to move forward. So anyway, just wanted to share that. And this quote from Helen Keller, which I'll share in just a moment. First, quick reminder, zerototravel.com/newsletter. If you're not signed up for the free newsletter, I mean, come on, you're getting the travel tips, you're getting the skinny on the new digital nomad visas and the updates, you're getting trip announcements, all this stuff you can't get on the podcast necessarily. And we can keep in touch over there. So sign up if you haven't done so. Leave you with this quote now, again from Helen Keller, quote, "Your success and happiness lies in you. Resolve to keep happy in your joy, and you shall form an invincible host against difficulties." Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.